विष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्म पदान्तिकम्। हरे कृष्णा, वेलकम बैक टू आवर भक्तिशास्त्री नेक्टर ऑफ डिवोशन क्लासेस। वी आर नाउ डिस्कसिंग द सिक्स कैरेक्टरिस्टिक्स ऑफ डिवोशन सर्विस। सो इन द प्रीवियस क्लास वी डिस्कस्ड अबाउट द quality of devotional service to free us from misery, klesha agni. So let's quickly recap that and then we'll move forward to the next discussion. So here we'll just so we discussed this, I won't repeat this, but I'll just quickly summarize it here. We discussed how our suffering originates in ignorance, that is avidya, and then it moves on to kutam, it creates a sinful proclivity within us, which leads to sinful desire, that is bijam, then we do papa, then or we do punya also, whichever way it is. Then that reaction to papa or punya accumulates as the aprarabdha, the unmanifest sinful reactions. The unmanifest sinful reactions become manifest as prarabdha, and then we undergo suffering or enjoyment. So now of course the aprarabdha also cycles back, and because when we do some sinful activity, the sinful activity also creates a sinful proclivity again. So that's how this becomes a cycle. So how does bhakti counter it? Bhakti, we discuss, avidya is uprooted. So how it is countered, I have written in the red words over here. Avidya is uprooted. Ignorance is removed because Krishna personally gives knowledge and bhakti illumines us. Tadami buddhi yogam tam, like that. And kutam is countered because even the sinful desires that we don't know, they are flooded out of our heart by the process of bhakti. So bijam is nullified. Nullified means the sinful desires that we may have, which we have been indulging in the past also, those desires, we realize that they don't give me any real happiness. There is a far greater happiness available in devotional service. And those desires become undesirable. As Krishna uses the word, nakama kami. One is no longer the desirer of desires. And as far as the suffering is concerned, the suffering is eradicated or transcended. So eradicated or transcended means that either the suffering is, Krishna says, aham tvam sarpakvekshya mokshayishyami. So the suffering is either eradicated, Krishna just takes away the sinful reactions from us. Krishna doesn't get the suffering come. And even if some suffering as a residue comes along, a devotee transcends that suffering. Why? Because bhakti gives us the higher taste. The remembrance of Krishna enables us to go beyond suffering. Madashraya katha amrishta shrunvanti katha yanticha tapanti vividha astapa naitan madgat chetasaha. The third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapil Dev describes that the devotees who take shelter of me, madashraya katha amrishta, that katha is so delishable that shrunvanti katha yanticha, they hear and speak about it, and by that, although tapanti vividha astapa, all the various miseries come, those miseries do not afflict the devotees. Because vinaitan madgata chetasa, their consciousness is not in that situation. Their consciousness is high above that situation. It's like outside it may be very hot, we have given this example several times. But if a person comes in the AC room, then the person doesn't feel the heat. So like that, a devotee by absorption in Krishna also transcends suffering. So of course, bhakti eradicates suffering. Oh, and in that way, bhakti is klesha agni. So, now after klesha agni, the next characteristic is shubhada. Shubhada means auspicious. Not just auspicious, but all auspicious. So, now Srila Prabhupada explains, what is the nature of all auspiciousness? That which benefits everyone, that which attracts everyone, that which produces good qualities, and that which bestows superior happiness. That is the meaning of auspicious, all auspicious. So let's look at these one by one. The word auspicious means, now what is the difference between klesha agni and auspicious? See, one is to remove misery. But just like in a deceased, when a person is sick, there's one part of the disease is removing of the infection. The second part is the recovery of the energy and the normal health. So sometimes the person is, the disease has been removed, but the person has not yet been, has come back to normal health. So the person is said to be recuperating. So it's not that the person is sick, but the person needs rest for recovery. So like that, here, all auspicious means that this misery is removed, but the future positive happiness is guaranteed. And how does this future positive happiness? Shubha da. Shubha is auspicious, da is that which gives. How is this brought about? That is because for it to be all auspicious, bhakti is all auspicious. That means when one devotee advances in devotional service, by that everyone is benefited. Now when we chant Hare Krishna attentively, now we are improving the world one thought at a time. Because ultimately, what happens in the world is determined by people's thoughts and desires, which translate into actions. And the world is not going to improve by somebody just coming and waving a magic wand. The world is going to improve, and then the people within that are going to improve. And the people are also not going to improve by some magic wand. People are going to improve when their thoughts and desires improve. So, bhakti is shubhada because bhakti improves our thoughts and desires. Bhakti purifies, removes our negative thoughts, selfish thoughts, destructive thoughts, and of course desires correspondingly. Thoughts grow into desires, and it replaces them with positive, selfless, noble thoughts and desires. So bhakti is shubhada. So actually speaking, bhakti benefits everyone. No, it's not that a person, we have discussed earlier how whenever we love some one thing, then any other thing apart from Krishna, then that love creates sectarianism. Okay, I love my country, then that means I'm not loving the opposite country. So if I love India, then because of my love of India, I may well hate Pakistan, because I consider Pakistan as my enemy. Whereas when we love Krishna, we love everyone. Now sometimes we may say that, okay, devotees also have to fight. Say, there are opponents of devotees, and we have to fight against them. So the Pandavas fought against Kauravas, but then the Pandavas are still the well-wishers of the Kauravas. And Lord Ram fought against Ravana, but after Ravana was killed, Lord Ram asked Vibhishan, insisted in fact to Vibhishan, that he also do the last rites of Ravana, because he said that the soul is pure and the soul should not have any antipathy, any hatred for the soul. So the point is that bhakti benefits everyone. It benefits everyone. How does it benefit everyone? Because bhakti directs our love towards Krishna and purifies our heart in a way that ultimately we become connected with everyone. So it attracts everyone, it benefits everyone. How can it attract everyone? Because everyone ultimately is a soul. Everyone ultimately is a soul. And that soul, all souls have a natural relationship with Krishna, which is just covered presently. And over a period of time, it will become uncovered. So by the practice of bhakti, we learn to rise beyond material things, to spiritual reality. And by rising to spiritual reality, we experience supreme happiness. So it benefits everyone. So because everybody has a relationship with Krishna, and everybody experiences spiritual happiness, then they give up inauspicious activities and they become situated in auspiciousness. And it produces good qualities. So Prabhupada also gives the example of how just by practicing devotional service for a few months, young people who were engaged in all kinds of inauspicious activities, intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, all sorts of activities, they give up those self-defeating activities and they develop self-control, they develop respectful attitude, humility, sensitivity. Now of course the development of these positive qualities is a progression, but those qualities are indeed developed. So yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvai gunaisatra samasate suraha samasate suraha. That actually for suras, for those who are the devatas, as compared to the demons, devatas have many good qualities. So that's why we say that a person who has good qualities is godly. So like that, by the practice of devotion, by developing devotion, all auspicious qualities develop in a person. Because essentially the soul has auspicious qualities. and the soul is simply covered over by the modes of ignorance, by the lower modes, because of which those pure qualities are obscured. And when a person becomes purified, then good qualities manifest. And that's how those good qualities also become the cause of auspiciousness. When we have good qualities, naturally we act positively, and when we act positively, naturally that brings positive results for us. So bhakti is auspicious because it produces good qualities, and then it bestows superior happiness. Ultimately, something, if it is auspicious, if we say that it doesn't bring happiness, then the auspiciousness doesn't have much meaning. So bhakti gives supreme happiness. That happiness of bhakti will be talked several times in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and we will discuss it progressively as we move forward. Now let's look at the references that Rupa Goswami has given for this, and look at those references one by one briefly. So here, so we see Krishna consciousness is all auspicious. So Prabhupada translates the pure devotional service as Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness. And he says it should be meant, it means welfare activities for all people of all the world. For all people of all the world. That's a universally attractive. And Prabhupada gives example that, and actually when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went, he benefited even the animals traveling the forest of Jharkhand. The tigers, the elephants, the deer, and all other animals joined him and were participating in their own ways by chanting, dancing and chanting Hare Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada would say that, you know, we don't have the potency to make animals dance, but people who are like you, living like animals, they can be made to dance by the chanting of the holy name. And Srila Prabhupada actually did that. So there's universal benefit by the process of chanting, and by the process of Krishna consciousness in general, chanting in specific. And we see this, that people who have no knowledge about Krishna also, they also relish chanting and they become attracted by it. So that is what is being talked about here, that bhakti gives us supreme happiness. Bhakti is actually attracts everyone, even non-human beings, what to speak of human beings. So when a person becomes a bhakta, we see that the example of Jad Bharat also, he was so sensitive that he did not even want to step on an ant. That's how a person becomes the well-wisher of all living beings. Then Srila Prabhupada talks about how a devotee gives up all bad activities, and materialistic people, even they be well educated, he may be highly educated from the academic point of view, but in the actual field of activities he may be seen to be baser than the animals. Many of the scientists, philosophers who are very respected for their scientific contributions or even their philosophical insights, if you look at their personal lives, often their personal lives are not marked by a very high personal standards in terms of their ability for self-mastery. Or they sometimes had illicit affairs. They may some famous authors, they were chain smokers, and some of the greatest authors of the last century, they all committed suicide in the end because of frustration. So because of whatever situations came, basically they did not have much self-mastery, so they did not have good qualities. So now we may say that, isn't their scientific knowledge itself, their capacity to develop scientific, to do scientific research, or their capacity to develop philosophical insight, isn't that itself a sign of good quality? Not exactly. You know, actually we get the capacity to do intellectual processing by our past karma. So some people are very good singers by their past karma. Some people may be very good humorists by their past karma. Some people may be very good intellectuals by their past karma. So the abilities that we get are largely developed by our past karma. But how we use to, but as far as our qualities are concerned, you know, the qualities, do they come by past karma? Certain tendencies may come, but our qualities are often a result of our choices. And the point here is that material things do not lead to auspicious qualities. So material education doesn't lead necessarily to auspicious qualities. We'll talk about this more in the next part. So now Srila Prabhupada talks about happiness in Krishna consciousness. So here he is talking about how Now, what is this point about happiness in Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada is mentioning? He talks about that Rupa Goswami has three kinds of happiness. Happiness derived from material enjoyment, happiness derived by identifying oneself with the Supreme Brahman, and happiness derived from Krishna consciousness. So we could call it, this is material happiness, this is impersonal happiness, and this is devotional happiness. So now, Prabhupada gives quotes from several places. For example, he gives a quote, Lord Shiva to Sati in the Tantra Shastras. A devotee gets all other happiness, happiness from the material impersonalist, and he gets further happiness also, more happiness than that also. So let's look at this point more now. When we talk about happiness, Prabhupada explains analytically that the happiness derived from devotional service is the best because it is eternal, whereas other happiness, all other forms of happiness are temporary. And the happiness of devotional service includes and excels the pleasures found in other types of happiness. So, what does this mean? This is, firstly, there is in terms of duration, the other is in terms of quantity. In terms of duration, all other pleasures are temporary. If a person attains some very great fame or position in this world, the person gets some pleasure by that. But that's temporary. When a person goes to heaven also, that's temporary. A person attains Brahmananda also. Brahmananda also doesn't satisfy the heart. And now, the other aspect is that the happiness that we get by devotional service is it is supreme happiness. So if a person may get, say, 1 rupee, 10 rupee, 100 rupees, but if a person gets a 1,000 rupee note, then all those are contained within it. Person gets a 1 crore rupee check, then all the 1 rupee, 10 rupee, 100 rupees are contained within it. So like that, devotional happiness is supreme happiness, and as compared to that, everything else is so small, it is included within it. One doesn't have to strive for it separately. Now this does not necessarily mean that the devotee gets sense gratification. A devotee may get also sometimes. And material enjoyment also a devotee may get. But the important point is that the devotee gets a happiness which is so great that it includes the happiness which is there in sense gratification. So that means the devotee gets such a rich happiness that the devotee doesn't feel the need for anything. Yam labdhva cha param labham manyate na adhikam tataha. That once one has got this, one feels there is no need for anything more. Manyate na adhikam, nothing more that is needed. So that is the glory of the happiness of pure devotion. It's the best happiness that one can possibly get. And this happiness is of the nature of everlasting happiness. Now happiness derived from this is eternal. And then Prabhupada used the example of, now Prabhupada compared this with different kinds of happiness. So one of the happiness he compares with is the happiness from impersonalism. And he gives the example that what happens to these Mayavadi sannyasis? The Mayavadi sannyasis, sometimes they claim that they are liberated and they have attained Brahman. But then after attaining Brahman, what do? They come back and act at the material level in terms of doing social service. So Prabhupada explains that this refers to that they have actually not experienced spiritual happiness. If they truly experience spiritual happiness, then if at all they were going to do something to benefit people, then what they would do is they will elevate people spiritually, not materially. So now, actually in the path of bhakti also, there is something like coming from a higher level down to a lower level. You know, there is a Kanishtha Adhikari, there is a Madhyam Adhikari, there is a Uttam Adhikari. So the Uttam Adhikari is so absorbed in Krishna that the Uttam Adhikari sees everyone as a devotee of Krishna. In contrast, the Madhyam Adhikari differentiates. Okay, this person is a devotee, or this person is a devotee, I should befriend this person. This person is innocent, let me share Krishnanas with this person. And this person is envious, let me keep a distance. And pray so that the person doesn't become offensive, let me keep a distance. And let me pray for his well-being from a distance. So, if a person has to preach, if a person has to share Krishna's message, the person has to be able to discriminate. Okay, this person is a devotee, this person is a potential devotee, this person is non-devotee, anti-devotee in fact. So the Uttam Adhikari doesn't do this differentiation. But when a pure devotee has to preach, then the pure devotee cannot preach from the Uttam Adhikari platform. So from the Uttam Adhikari platform, the pure devotee may come down to the Madhyam Adhikari platform. So now, what is the difference between, say, the Mayavadis coming from the spiritual platform down to the material platform, and the pure devotee coming from the Kanishta platform to the Madhyama platform? There's a huge difference. The difference is that both are at the spiritual level. Kanishta, Uttama and Madhyama, both are at the spiritual level. So when a devotee is at the Madhyama level also, a devotee is experiencing spiritual happiness and wanting to share spiritual happiness with others. In contrast, when somebody who is a spiritualist starts doing material welfare work, then that person has descended from the spiritual platform to the material platform. So the point is not that material welfare is bad. We have discussed this elaborately in our Ishopanishad classes when we talked about Manav Seva and Madhav Seva, social service and Krishna consciousness, in the purport of one of the Ishopanishad verses, I think the 13th, 14th verses we discussed. So the point is, spiritualist doing material welfare work is not spiritual. That means they have descended from the spiritual platform to the material platform. Now, why would they descend from the spiritual platform to the material platform? Prabhupada explains that's because they have not experienced real spiritual happiness. Because if one experiences real spiritual happiness, then one will not think of providing material happiness to others. One will understand that spiritual happiness is so much greater than material happiness that I should elevate people spiritually. So in this way, even the happiness of impersonalism is, of impersonal realization of Brahmananda, is not very great happiness. Then Srila Prabhupada talks about the happiness that comes from mystic perfections, yoga siddhis. So yoga siddhis can give a lot of pleasure in terms of, say, a person who can, see, there's Prabhupada gives the example there of Praptisiddhi. Praptisiddhi means I am sitting here, but I just stretch out my hand, and if I like, say, apples from Kashmir, I will be sitting in Mumbai, I just stretch my hand and I'm going to get apples from Kashmir and I eat those, I enjoy those apples. So this is Praptisiddhi. Now, with our skeptical nature, we may say that this is impossible. How is this possible? But the point is that there is a universe which is much subtler than what modern science conceives. So rather than going into the specifics of the mechanisms, Srila Prabhupada focuses on the principles. So I will not go into the specifics of the mechanism, but I'll simply explain how, with our scientific bent of mind, we can at least find the siddhis intelligible. So the idea is that the universe has multiple dimensions, and when there a person accesses a higher dimension, then that which is not easily accessible at a lower dimension becomes accessible. So we discussed this earlier, that if an ant has to go from this end of the room to that end of the room, say, then the ant will have to come down vertically and then go across horizontally. But it is going in first lengthwise and then, say, breadthwise. But then if we have a diagonal which goes across, we introduce another dimension, then the distance which the ant has to scale decreases significantly. So like that, when higher dimensions involved, the distances decrease. So beyond the body is the mind. And the mind is not limited by the laws of physics which modern science has discovered. The mind can be at one place and the mind can go at another place. Now, when we say the mind goes to another place, we generally think of it only just thinking about that place. But thoughts are not just thought. Thoughts are also things. The mind is also not just something amorphous or abstract. The mind is also a thing. And it is possible for the mind to travel also. So some people who have access to the subtle powers of the mind can do things which we are not able to do. Actually, even in today's world, there are many people who have abilities which are not comprehensible by modern science. So for example, there have been many experiments which have reasonably well documented telepathy. So one person can convey a message to another person, and there are no radio waves, there are no possible waves going between the two persons, and two people are, say, placed in enclosures which do not allow any waves to flow, and still this person reads something arbitrary and thinks about that, and the other person comes to know about that. Now, that of course, this sort of experiment, there will be always naysayers who don't accept it. But the point is, we are not here to scientifically prove the siddhis. The point is that it is intelligible. that when we understand the point that there is not just gross matter, there is subtle matter. And subtle matter is not restricted by the laws of physics. But then many things become possible. The universe opens up to many more possibilities. And rather than dismissing them as just an imagination, we understand that they are actually possibilities at another level of reality. So Prabhupada focuses not on the technical mechanisms, he focuses on another principle. He says, what are people trying to do by acquiring siddhis? He says, they are trying to gain control over matter. They are trying to gain control over matter, get control over things. And Prabhupada says, that's what people are trying to do through technology also. So through technology, what are people trying to do? People are trying to manipulate matter in ways in which we can't normally manipulate matter. So let's look at the example that Prabhupada gives over here. So Prabhupada says that anima siddhi refers to the power by which one can become so small that he can enter into a stone. Modern scientific improvements also enable us to enter into stone because they provide for excavating so many subways, penetrating the hills, etc. So similarly, there is laghima, one may start flying in the air. And when one starts flying in the air, that Prabhupada says that that is also performed by modern scientists. So one becomes light and one starts flying in the air. Now Prabhupada goes on and gives many other examples of this. Now the important point here is what? Sita, Vasita, these are various siddhis which are there. You can read the explanation of those siddhis. The important point is that these siddhis are still material. They are basically technologies. The mechanism of those technologies may be different. So for a person who doesn't know the mechanism may consider it to be miraculous or even mythological. So this person may say it's impossible, and when it's possible, I say, how is it? It's miraculous. So a person who doesn't know anything about, say, electronic communications, and that person may say, if I put a cell phone near my head and I'm talking with somebody who's in America, this person may say it's miraculous. But a person who has some knowledge of science understands that it's not miraculous. There's a mechanism by which this is happening. And once we understand the mechanism, then whatever seems miraculous becomes demystified. So now, this remarkable parallel which Prabhupada is giving between modern technology, modern scientific technology, and mystic perfections, yogi siddhis. What is the purpose of that? The purpose of that is twofold. One is that we shouldn't get too excited about modern technology. That is one way we can look at it. Prabhupada doesn't explicitly talk about it here, he talks about it elsewhere. So, and other is we shouldn't get too excited about mystic siddhis also. Both are ultimately material. Sometimes when people say that, oh, science has developed airplanes and science has developed this and science has developed that, you say, oh, such extraordinary things have been done. Yes, they have been done, and where credit is due, it can be given. But we have to know that actually we have developed airplanes now. But there's nothing to get excited. In the past, there were airplanes also. Ravana had his Vimana, his Pushpaka. And unlike modern planes, when Pushpaka was flying in the sky, Pushpaka did not leave a trail of smoke behind, polluting the environment. No, it was using holistic technology. It was using subtler mechanisms of which we have no knowledge. And there are some indications about this sort of thing, even in a set of books called the Vimana Shastras. So there's nothing to get very excited about with modern technology. You know, nowadays, with so many gadgets coming up, you know, we have iPods and iPhones and iPads and smaller devices with greater and greater capacities. So some people can get very impressed by, oh, technology is doing magic. Yes, now we may say that technology is doing magic, but ultimately what is it doing? It is simply giving us the capacity to manipulate matter. And in the past, when people had yogic siddhis, you know, they could do similar manipulation without needing external gadgetry. You know, if a person has, say, a particular yogic siddhi, then the person can do the same thing without needing all the elaborate technical gadgetry. So what we could have earlier, what we could do with the siddhis internally, not spiritually, but internally at the level of the mind, now we have technology which does it externally. So one aspect of this is that don't get too excited about what technology is providing. If something is useful in Krishna's service, we can definitely use it. And that is the principle of Yukta Vairagya. The other aspect of this is that when we look at siddhis, there is no need to get too excited about the siddhidas. Many people, they think that the siddhis are so amazing. You know, say somebody can walk on water, or somebody can, as is a prapti siddhi, you know, get anything that they want. They think this is so amazing. And we'll get very thrilled. And generally what happens is that if Prabhupada often says that his yogic siddhis are childish. Why childish? Because children, often when one child is able to do something which other children are not able to do, then that child becomes very impressed. Oh, you can do that? I can't do that. So like that, you know, some people are able to do something, you know, just move some hand and produce some ash or something like that. Now, many people who claim these are hoaxes, but even if those people are actually able to do it, still what's so great about it? It's something which is ultimately material. It's not going to save us from the cycle of birth and death. So, in one sense, we can use the parallel of technology and siddhis to de-glamorize technology. And in another sense, we can use it to de-glamorize siddhis also. De-glamorize. That means we understand there is nothing fantastic, nothing very great about it. Nothing to get worked up about it. So, now after describing these various siddhis, then Srila Prabhupada says that actually the happiness from all the siddhis is temporary, and it is, the siddhis are not going to last forever. You know, I have a siddhi, I do some tapasya, I'll have a siddhi for one lifetime, or maybe some siddhis may stay, I'm born with some siddhi in the next lifetime. But even the lifetime is temporary, no siddhi is going to stay with me forever. So it's all temporary. And ultimately what happens, even actually the siddhis are come in the path of yoga, and they come in and they are talked about in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. But even Patanjali says that siddhis are actually distractions. And if one gets caught in siddhis, then one becomes yoga bhrashta. One becomes deviated from the path of yogic perfection. The purpose and perfection of the, if even the path of yoga is samadhi, is absorption in the Supreme Lord. Patanjali in the Yoga Sutra does not describe who is the Ishvara, and does not very clearly describe what exactly happens in the state of samadhi. That is described in other yogic scriptures, and that is made more clear in the Bhagavad Gita and further in the Bhagavatam. Who is the Ishvara? That is Krishna. And what is that samadhi? That is a devotional absorption in Krishna. It is not an impersonal merging. So the point is, siddhis are distractions even from the point of view of Yoga Sutra given by Patanjali. There is nothing to get excited about in Yoga Sutra. And then Prabhupada quotes from Prahlad Maharaj over here, that I have got so much happiness that I don't feel I need any more happiness. I simply want to be engaged in devotional service, and if I am engaged in devotional service, then I don't need anything else. So there are many prayers like that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which talk about, I don't want anything except devotional service. So Prahlad is explaining, my dear Lord, I repeatedly pray unto your lotus feet that I may simply be stronger in devotional service. I simply pray that my Krishna consciousness may be more strong and steady, because happiness derived out of Krishna consciousness and devotional service is so powerful that with it one can have all the other perfections of religiousness, economic development, sense gratification, and even the attainment of liberation from material existence. So all this happiness come together. Prabhupada further gives the example of Kola Vichashridhar over there. Kola Vichashridhar was extremely poor. Now generally, most poor people, their aspiration is wealth. So I get money and then I become free from poverty. So Kola Vichashridhar, you know, he was pure devotee. And when the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Mahaprakash Leela, he was calling all the devotees, intimate associates, Haridas Thakur, Advaita Acharya, all of them, and he was blessing them with profuse mercy. And at that time, he called Kola Vichashridhar. And he asked, whatever you want, ask for me. And what did Kola Vichashridhar say? He said, my dear Lord, let me always remember you. And in the rasa with which he was relishing with Kola, with Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya would come and argue with him. He was a seller of vegetables, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would argue, haggle over the prices of vegetables. And finally, after all the haggling, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would just take the vegetables at whatever price he wanted. So now this is, even from the material point of view, not very attractive. But actually, the happiness of devotional service far supersedes everything material. So although he was materially poor, and by dealing with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was getting a poor deal materially, but still he said, let me always remember you in that form in which you come and you argue with me and you take my vegetables at the price that you want. Why? Because he was seeing the Lord, he was talking with the Lord, he was hearing the Lord talk, and in that remembrance of the Lord, there was such happiness, there's nothing else required for a devotee. So Prabhupada writes over here, further he quotes from Narada Panchatantra, that any kind of happiness you derive from religiousness, economic development, liberation or sense gratification, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, none of this happiness cannot even dare to enter into the heart of a pure devotee. And Prabhupada quotes about from another scripture, he says that how just as a queen comes along, when the queen comes, then her personal attendants also come. So like that, Mukti Mukulitanjali Sevate Asman. So that actually it is said that when there is bhakti rises in the heart, then mukti folds hands and waits to serve such a devotee. So just as when a queen comes, her attendants come. So that queen is Bhakti Devi. When the queen of Bhakti Devi comes, everything else automatically comes. So here Srila Prabhupada is quoting references based on Rupa Goswami's Bhaktisthana Sindhu, which illustrate two points. First is that a devotee doesn't care for liberation and other dharma artha kama moksha. And second is devotee automatically gets dharma artha kama moksha. So that's how the two points which we mentioned earlier, that everything else is temporary, only this is eternal. So devotee cares only for the eternal. And in contrast, whatever is there in these pleasures, that automatically comes for a devotee. So adhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadish kamaye mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhakti rahai tuki tvai. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying over here, what do I want? I am getting such happiness. He's not mentioning the word happiness, but that's implied in the prayer itself, that I simply want ahituki bhakti. I simply want pure devotion. Pure devotion, as compared to that, I do not want material enjoyment. I do not want artha. I do not want kama. Dhanam, janam, sundarim. So I do not want artha. I do not want kama. I do not want anything else. I don't want moksha also. Janmani janmanishvare. So I simply want your devotion. Now again, that is a subtle point, that if we practice devotional service to become happy, then are we really selfless? Ultimately, I am doing devotional service so that I become happy. So then I am wanting my own happiness. Then how is it selfless? Actually, it is selfish only. No, a pure devotee does not practice devotional service to become happy. A pure devotee loves Krishna, and that love of Krishna impels the pure devotee to serve Krishna. And now, happiness is a natural result of pure love. Happiness is not a motive of pure love. So motive means that which comes before. Result means that which comes after. So a devotee serves Krishna because the devotee loves Krishna. So that service to Krishna, that bhakti, is not motivated by the desire for happiness. Bhakti results in happiness. So there's a difference. That's why actually a pure devotee's bhakti is not selfish, it is selfless. And that's why we see the pure devotees, when they are serving Krishna, it's not that they are calculating whether this service to Krishna will make me happy, then I'll do this service. Otherwise, I won't do it. Now, Yashoda Mai takes anxiety for Krishna. We see Madhavendra Puri, when the Lord told him, go and get Chandan for me. Then he went from Vrindavan, which is way, way in North India, and he went all the way down to South, almost to East India. At that time, very difficult to go through dangerous areas, ruled by Mlechhas. He went and got Chandan. So he was not thinking whether this will make me happy. At a physical level, it brought a lot of trouble. So a devotee is not motivated in the service by pleasure. Actually, pleasure, a satisfaction, is a natural result of bhakti. So that's why there is a difference. It's not selfless. It is not selfish. It is selfless. Now, Srila Prabhupada, actually, Rupa Goswami, Srila Prabhupada said this is a summary study. So, the some of the examples of happiness which Rupa Goswami gives in the category of happiness, Prabhupada used it earlier in the category of Shubhada, in the category of auspiciousness, but actually both are related and both are applicable in both places. So in that sense, technically there may be a difference, but in terms of effective meaning and application, there's no difference. Now let's look at the next characteristic which Prabhupada mentions. It's a rareness of pure devotional service. Sudurlabha, sudurlabha. It's not only labha is to attain, durlabha is difficult to attain. Sudurlabha is extremely difficult to attain. So, why is it difficult to attain? Because of two reasons. So, here we'll see those two reasons. It is unattainable by one's own efforts, and Krishna is reluctant to give it. Let's try to understand this. It is unattainable by one's own efforts. Bhakti is not something which is just our emotion. Bhakti is actually a gift of Krishna. Jiva Goswami explains in the Priti Sandarbha that bhakti is a manifestation of Ladini Shakti. So that means it's not that when I think of Krishna and I feel some emotion for Krishna, that automatically by thinking of some emotion for Krishna I will develop bhakti. Or by myself feeling some emotion. I may feel some emotion for Krishna, and that is a preliminary stage of bhakti. But if I want to experience the full richness of bhakti, then bhakti is a gift that comes from Krishna. Bhakti is not just a feeling in our heart. Bhakti is actually Radharani. It's Ladini Shakti. Ladini Shakti is manifested as Radharani. And that Ladini Shakti manifests in this world. In our heart, when we serve and please Krishna, so by His mercy, bhakti manifests in our heart. So, bhakti is not something which we can ourselves get. Bhakti is something which is bestowed by Krishna. So that is first point. We cannot get it ourselves. And secondly, so Prahlad Maharaj actually tells this also. Several naisha matistava duru kramangrim. So shatya namar anartha pagamo yadartha. So he says that actually one's mati, one's consciousness, urukramangrim, that Lord who does extraordinary activities, somebody does extraordinary activities, actually it's easy to get attracted to him. But still, to get attracted to him in a sustained way is not easy. And to develop a transformational attraction towards Krishna, we need the mercy of devotees. What does he say? That unless one bathes in the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees. So Krishna gives His mercy through His devotees. When we serve the devotees and we please the devotees, when the devotees bestow their mercy, that's how Krishna's mercy comes to us. So bhakti is not very easy, it cannot be obtained by our own efforts. And secondly, bhakti is something which Krishna alone gives, and Krishna does not give bhakti easily. Why does Krishna not give bhakti easily? Muktim dadati karichit nasma bhakti yogam. Muktim dadati. Krishna may even give mukti, but he does not give bhakti very easily. Actually, that will be related with a later point, that bhakti attracts Krishna also. Bhakti not only attracts Krishna, bhakti controls Krishna. So Krishna allows Himself to be controlled only by those, by a very intimate circle. So only those who have no motive other than to love and serve Him, Krishna comes under their control. So that's how it's a reciprocal process. The purer our love becomes, the more Krishna gives us love. And the more Krishna gives us love, the purer our love becomes further. And ultimately, Krishna, it's not that Krishna wants to withhold it from us, but Krishna wants us to want it. Krishna wants us to want it. Why? Because, say Krishna's love for us is like the sun. Sun can give all the light that it wants. Sun can give all the light that it contains also. But if I close my eyes, then I cannot see the sun. So now if the sun is to illuminate me, what do I have to do? I have to open my eyes. Unless I open my eyes, no matter how effulgent the sun becomes, the sun's illumination cannot benefit me. So, when it is said that Krishna does not give bhakti easily, what does it mean? Krishna actually wants to see our desire. Krishna wants us to open our eyes. That means Krishna wants us to show through our actions that we want to love Him. And as long as we have any other desire, apart from the desire to love Him, then Krishna says, okay, if that's what you want, I'll give you that. And you can stay well satisfied with that thing, whatever it may be. So in this way, Krishna doesn't necessarily deprive us of bhakti, but He does not give it cheaply to us. Why? Because He wants us to see whether we want it or not. And when we want it, then He gives it to us. He's eager to give it to us. It's not that He is wanting to keep it away from us. He's eager to give it to us, but we have to show that we want it and we value it. And when we show Krishna that we value it and value it more than other things, just like a child, a mother is there and a child is there. And the child starts crying, the mother comes and gives one toy to the child. Child starts playing, becomes happy and starts playing with the toy. Mother will go away and do her work. And then the child starts crying again, the mother gives another toy. And the child becomes happy and goes away. But when the mother gives a toy and the child keeps crying, mother gives another toy and the child keeps crying. Mother gives a third toy and the child keeps crying. And then the child asks, mother asks, what do you want? The child says, I want you. I want you. And then what does the mother will put everything else aside? Pick up the child. So like that, Krishna gives us various things to see whether we are ready to settle for that only. And when He says we don't want anything except Him, then He gives Himself to us. That is Krishna. So, sudurlabha, it is very, very rare. Bhakti cannot be got easily. Let's look at this further. So, Prabhupada gives the example over here of how, why is bhakti so rare? He gives that Yudhishthir Maharaj is Narada is telling Yudhishthir that the Lord becomes controlled by you. So this is the point which we are making, that sometimes when the reference comes, that the reference may not be very clear. So Prabhupada of course makes it clear. So the verse may contain a lot of points, and we have to learn to focus on what is the point which is relevant to the context. So the relevant to the context, the point is that the Lord becomes controlled by the devotee, just as the Lord became the servant, practically speaking, of the Pandavas. You know, He was going as a messenger for them, He was becoming a charioteer for them, He was acting like a guard for them. So that glorious Lord who became all this for His devotees, He was controlled by their devotion. So the Lord becomes controlled by the devotion of only those who are His very intimate devotees. So that's why the bhakti is rarely achieved, because it is can't be attained by our own efforts, and it is attained by Krishna's grace, but Krishna also gives that grace carefully. And then after that, moksha laghuta krita. Moksha laghuta krita is, this actually we already discussed it. Moksha laghuta krita means that laghu means tiny, small. It derides the happiness that comes from moksha. And Prabhupada used two examples over Sridhar Swami and Prahlad Maharaj. That actually both of them indicate that the happiness of bhakti is insignificant. The happiness of bhakti is so great that all other happiness become insignificant. So now we go and discuss, Prabhupada is talking about, he talks about Sandhranand Visheshatma. Let's look at Sandhranand Visheshatma. What is Sandhranand Visheshatma? This is actually a very, very dense, concentrated happiness. So, now he has explained happiness in three levels. Now, as we have discussed, happiness is, there are three levels of bhakti. There is sadhana bhakti, there is bhava bhakti, and there is prema bhakti. So, among the six characters of devotional service, different characteristics manifest in different stages. So the characters of Shubda manifest in Sadhana Bhakti, Klesha Agni and Shubda manifest in Sadhana Bhakti. Then the next, including Moksha Laghuta, manifest in Bhava Bhakti. And Sandhranand Visheshatma and Krishna Akarshani manifests in Prema Bhakti. So now In Shubdha also there is some happiness that is mentioned. Rupa Goswami talks about happiness in Shubdha, then he talks about happiness in Moksha Labhuta Akrita, and then he talks about happiness in Sandhraan Vishishatma also. Now in each of these, the happiness that a devotee is experiencing is far, far greater than what is there in the previous day. So, what does Sandhraananda Visheshatma refer to? Sandhraananda Visheshatma, actually just like there is, so these three levels of happiness, if there is air, now in the air there is space, other things can go inside. In liquid, the molecules are more concentrated, something can dissolve into it. But when something is solid, nothing can go into it. So what is happening is the content that is there, the molecules that are there, they become more and more concentrated. So like that, the happiness in devotional life, as one advances, it becomes more and more concentrated so that nothing can go inside. Nothing can go inside. So it is said in sadhana bhakti, the happiness is a little dissipated. In bhava bhakti, it becomes more concentrated. In prema bhakti, it becomes most concentrated. That's why it is said that in, Rupa Goswami explains that in sadhana bhakti, the happiness of devotional service is superior to the happiness of sense gratification, other happiness. So even at our stage, as we keep practicing devotional service, we start realizing that actually the happiness that we get through spiritual life is superior to the happiness that we get through material life. But still, this happiness also seems real to us. It also seems appealing to us because we are not yet developed the purity by which we can relish the spiritual happiness. Just like sugarcane juice is sweet, but if my jaundice is not yet fully cured, then I cannot taste its sweetness fully. So like that, in sadhana bhakti also, if we compare that to weighing scale, then the happiness of pure devotion, happiness of bhakti is higher than the happiness of the gratification. That's the sadhana bhakti stage. Then when we go to bhava bhakti, then it becomes like that. The scale becomes so different, the distance becomes so great that as compared to the happiness of devotion, the happiness of some other happiness, the happiness of some gratification, other happiness, this has become insignificant. And when you come to prema bhakti, the happiness becomes, other happiness becomes non-existent. It's not there only. So that's how the happiness in bhakti keeps increasing. So Sandhraananda Visheshatma means the happiness is so concentrated, so deep, so intense that one doesn't need anything else. One doesn't care for anything else. In fact, other things don't exist only for a devotee. So that is a far deeper happiness. And then there is, so this is the supreme happiness and anandam pudivardhanam patipadam purnam amrita svadhanam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talks about something similar. And it talks about ocean of happiness that keeps expanding. And then there is Krishna Akarshini. Krishna Akarshini means that bhakti attracts Krishna. Now we know everybody in this world is attracted by Cupid. And Cupid is a Madan. Madan, one who churns the mind of people. Manmath he is called as Manmath, who just churns the mind of people. You know, the mind gets agitated. Maybe I'll do this, then I'll be able to enjoy. I do this, then I'll be able to enjoy. Mind is churned by Cupid. But Krishna is called as Manmath. He is Madan Mohan. Now he churns the mind of Madan. There's a place in Dhawan called Terakadamba. At Terakadamba, Madan was trying to. Krishna was performing Leela with the gopis, and Madan came over there and he tried to shoot arrows, Kamadevas, his flower arrows, to attract people, which actually pierce the heart. They are called as Pushpabana, flower arrows. And they seem like flowers, but when they go inside, they cause pain like a real arrow. So, Pushpabana. So, Cupid tried to shoot his arrows at Krishna to try to induce within Krishna material emotions. And what happened? Nothing happened to Krishna, but then Krishna cast a sidelong glance at Cupid. And when Krishna cast a sidelong glance at Cupid, it is said the eyebrows are like bows. When a person raises the eyebrows, then what happens? It becomes shaped like a bow. And it is said that when the sexual attraction between people, then when a woman raises the eyebrows, it's from her eyebrows, the arrows of Cupid are shot. And they pierce into the heart of people. So Krishna raised his eyebrows. And Krishna raised, what happened? Then the arrows of Krishna went into the heart of Cupid. And what happened? Cupid fell senseless. So Cupid, his bow fell away from his hand. He was captivated by Krishna. So that is, Krishna is called as Madan Mohan. Kider Kadam is the place where Krishna conquered over Madan Mohan. Madan. But then Radharani is Madan Mohan Mohini. Now, the Cupid shot his arrows at Krishna, but when Krishna shot his arrows back at Cupid through his eye gun, Cupid forgot his bow. This bow fell away from his hands. He was so captivated. So Krishna plays his flute to attract the gopis. But when Radharani comes in front of him, Krishna is so captivated by Radharani that his fingers stay over there only, but the flute falls away from his hands. And Krishna becomes captivated by Radharani. So in the Gita Govinda of Jayadeva Goswami described how, you know, Krishna actually fell at the feet of Radharani. Because he was so captivated by her. So Krishna Akarshini. The bhakti attracts, pure devotion attracts even Krishna. And that's why this is the supreme potency of bhakti. It attracts everyone, attracts Krishna also. And then Prabhupada writes over here, he quotes from Prabhupada in the Uddhava Gita, is telling Uddhava, "My dear Uddhava, you may know it from me that the attraction I feel for devotional service rendered by my devotees is not to be attained even by the performance of mystic yoga, philosophical speculation, and all these things." My Prabhupada paraphrases, these are all of course very nice activities, but they are not as attractive to me as the transcendental loving service rendered by my devotees. And then Prabhupada again quotes the example of Yudhishthira Maharaj, "Yuyam Nriloke Bhattabhuri Bhaga," that he is always with you. The Lord is so attracted to you. Krishna is telling you this. Narad Muni is telling you this chair, that Krishna is so attracted to you that Krishna comes and stays with you repeatedly. He goes away. He doesn't go anywhere. He comes and stays with you. Normally, the sages go out in the forest to search for God. They leave their home and go to search for God. You are so exalted that you don't have to leave your home, that God comes to your home. And God stays in your home. Krishna Akarshini. In the Mahabharata, in the Shanti Parva, it is described, after the war is over, after Yudhishthira Maharaj is installed as the king, then Krishna is staying with the Pandavas, and Yudhishthira Maharaj comes one morning to meet Krishna. And at that time he says, Krishna is in meditation. And then he is amazed, and Krishna speaks, and Yudhishthira speaks out softly. And he says, "Oh my dear, how amazing is it that you on whom the whole Lord meditates, you are in meditation." He says, "Can I know on whom you are meditating?" And Krishna slowly comes out of trance, opens his eyes, and then he says, "You know, that illustrious son of Ganga, you know, who was the disciple of Parashuram, who was the disciple of Vyasadeva, of Narada, of Brahaspati, of Shukracharya, who learned from all these great souls, who was such a great warrior that he single-handedly defeated all the kings of the world during the Swayamvar Vamba Ambika Ambalika. That person who could not be defeated by that Parshuram, who had defeated all the Kshatriyas of the world 21 times, that person who was the personification of Dharma, that person who, as long as he was on the battlefield, there was no hope of victory for you, that glorious Bhishma is in his final days and he is meditating on me. And because he is meditating on me with such devotion, my heart is attracted to him and I am meditating on him." So Krishna is attracted to his devotee. And Yudhishthira Maharaj was greatly moved by this. And he says, "Yes." He says, "Should we go to Yudhishthira, to Bhishma Pitama's side?" He says, "Yes, we will go by his side." And Krishna reveals his own darshan to Bhishma Pitama when he is departing from the world. So Krishna Akarshani, bhakti attracts even Krishna. This is the speciality of bhakti. Now let's look back at the six qualities once again, and then we will conclude this class. So now, among these, the first two qualities, Klesha Agni and Shubda, they occur at the stage of sadhana bhakti. Then Moksha Lagutakrita and Sudurlabha, they occur at the level of Bhava Bhakti. And Sandranam Visheshatma and Sri Krishna Akarshani, they occur at the level of Prema Bhakti. In this way, Rupa Goswami describes the six characters of devotional service. And in this way, he attracts our heart by describing the glory of devotional service through its six characteristics. He inspires us. You know that let us wholeheartedly practice devotional service and attain all these wonderful gifts that Bhakti Devi is ready to give us. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.